Today's episode of Dog Nation Daily is brought to you by Meriwether and Tharp, your source for Georgia divorce. Find them online at theatlantadivorceteam.com.
Presented by DogNation.com, this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
I find Carson Beck to be such a fascinating figure for Georgia this upcoming season, just simply because in the Kirby Smart era, and this isn't a good thing or a bad thing. In fact, in many cases for Georgia, it's worked out to be a good thing. But in the Kirby Smart era, we just haven't very frequently seen Georgia be a very heavily quarterback-led team. Georgia's been, you know, fortunate to have good quarterback play. You probably can't be a good team if you don't. But in terms of the quarterback being the unmistakable face of the franchise, to use a phrase we probably use with professional sports more often with college, but that sort of unmistakable face of the program, we're just not really used to seeing that be the quarterback at Georgia very much. That's because Georgia's always had great defense. That's because Georgia in many years has been known as RBU. It's not always been quarterback for whom that's been the case, but it probably is this year. And I think it gives Georgia a chance to achieve an incredible level of success. Obviously, national championship is the goal. And for Carson Beck himself, incredible individual success. You know, we saw Stetson Bennett become a Heisman finalist in 2022, the first time that it happened for Georgia since 1992. And we believe that Beck has a very reasonable chance of doing even more than that. Not only could he be a Heisman finalist, but he could actually win the award. And, you know, Bennett went on to be a second-round pick, which for Georgia quarterbacks in most years is actually a pretty good level of draft success. This, by the way, is even predating Kirby Smart. Most successful quarterbacks in program history haven't always been, you know, drafted, you know, nearly that high. You got to go back to what Matthew Stafford in the 2009 NFL draft to find a Georgia quarterback taking the first round. He was taken number one overall, and it is reasonably possible that Beck could be that for Georgia as well this year. So the sky is the limit in terms of what Beck could do individually, what this team could do, you know, collectively, and of course that's true. And part of the reason why we know some of that's true is because if Beck had chosen to go into this year's NFL draft, the first round that's taking place tonight, there's at least some chance he could have heard his name called in the first round, and if not the first round, maybe the second round, and he could essentially by, you know, tomorrow be beginning a journey of being an NFL quarterback and, you know, maybe sooner rather than later, maybe a starter at the NFL level. And so instead of doing all of that now, Beck decided to forego that and come back to Georgia for another go of it. And Beck's been pretty consistent in talking about some of this. He said some of this way back at the Orange Bowl in Miami, and a few days ago he had a chance to be interviewed by Chris Lowe, ESPN.com, and he sort of said some of that again. After a year in which Beck performed well enough, at the very least, he's a college kid driving a Lamborghini. Like, at the very least, we're talking about a pretty successful quarterback and the fact that his vehicle is well-known. He's at least performed well enough to be a college kid driving around a Lamborghini. Well, how come you stay in college then? How come you just don't go to the NFL? And I thought Carson Beck gave the kind of answer to ESPN.com the other day that I think the Georgia fans are going to really like. Beck says, there was more I wanted to do here, more that this team can accomplish. Now, let me park on that just for a moment. Don't you love the idea that Beck kind of intertwines the idea of what he wanted to do with what the team can accomplish? Now, some of that may be a natural level of selflessness on the part of Beck. Perhaps that's the case. But I think there's also a practical reality at play here, too, that Carson, being a student of the game, understands that quarterbacks are judged a lot more by just the touchdowns they throw, by the stats they put up. They're judged a lot more than just by that. This is a position where winning matters too, that if you want to be the best quarterback, you better win, because if all you've got the stats and the no championships, there's going to be a little bit of a ding on your resume because of that. I believe that intuitively, even if he doesn't say it out loud this way, Carson Beck perhaps understands that, because in the same sentence there, he connects things that he wanted to do with things this team can accomplish. And quarterbacks are judged by how much they win. Beck tells ESPN he comes back because he thinks there's more winning that can be done. He goes on to say, and this is a quote, "I'd worked hard to get to this point, and I'd waited my turn. I didn't leave earlier when maybe I had chances to transfer. So I sure wasn't going to leave now. And I totally respect that from Carson Beck. Interesting quote there from ESPN.com of, well, why would I sort of stop doing this now when I've worked so hard to get to this point? And I would say about that, it sort of tells the story here of not just a player that can help Georgia here right now, but this is the kind of story that can become sort of the thing of legend. And the Carson Beck story could go on to benefit Georgia for a good number of years. You'll always go back and tell the story of, remember when Carson Beck came in for the class of 2020 and thought he was going to be the starter in 2021 when the quarterback got hurt, but he didn't. But he eventually became the starter in 2023, and then he came back to Georgia in 2024, and he wrote a level of history for himself that we'll be talking about for ages. It's the kind of perfect sort of thing that coaches love hearkening back on. And I do think that one of the reasons why stories like this do get hearkened back on is because they do have tremendous value. That Beck, if the story plays out the way we think that it could be the kind of legend and folklore that benefits Georgia forever, because when future Georgia players are asked to make similar decisions, Kirby Smart can look at it and say, and this is how it could work out for you, just like it did for this guy. The same way they do that with Jordan Davis. And remember we did the thing the other day about Kirby Smart not worrying about defensive stats because he points to the guys who've been drafted. Carson Beck could become the offensive version of that proof of concept that Georgia says it sells so well on defense. But that, frankly, is for the future. How about for the present right now? What is this level of motivation for Beck? The guy who said, boy, I've waited my turn. You know, I've waited for this, and now I'm ready to enjoy all of the spoils of victory that come my way now that I'm the Georgia starting quarterback. I know he was on the Players Lounge the other day, the player podcast. He talked about how much fun he was having. I think the fun is a pretty important word. But around this idea of believing there's more accomplishments to be gained and more unfinished business, that's another phrase that Smart has used, or I should say that Beck has used some this offseason. In that same interview with the Players Lounge, where he kind of expounded upon similar themes to what he touched on in the print interview with Chris Lowe and ESPN, you know, Beck kind of talked about, you know, that level of motivation and what it is that he wants to find out about himself, what it is that he wants to demonstrate about himself here this year. And much the same way that I believe that Georgia fans will like what Beck told ESPN, what he said in this Players Lounge interview going back a few months ago, I already know Georgia fans like that there as well. Let's get this as a reminder.
Now this season going into it, knowing that I'm going to be the guy, it's like, how do I, you know, work even harder than I ever have before? And like, how do I still like maintain that hunger even coming off of a season where, you know, I thought that I did well? It's pretty much just like trying to eliminate any type of complacency and then also finding, you know, that leadership role and building these connections with all these new guys that we have. Cause I mean, it's a new team full of new faces.
Complacency is an interesting word because he's obviously not just biding his time for a chance to move on to the NFL next year. He is here for one final season, and that is for a reason. I'll also say this, many of you know that we're not cool enough, at least I'm not cool enough to have that, like, you know, music underneath that clip that comes to us, you know, via the Players Lounge there on that. I'm not cool enough to kind of put the beat down underneath the clip. But either way, the point is that I think this year shapes up to be a very fun one for Georgia because, you know, we've seen Georgia have success a lot of different kinds of ways. In 2021, it won a national championship with five first-round picks on defense. In 2022, it won a national championship with a guy like Stetson Bennett becoming a Heisman finalist and a guy like Brock Bowers making a case for himself to be, you know, one of the greatest players in program history. And now in 2024, Georgia's kind of trying to invent a new archetype of a quarterback who has the potential for even more individual success than Stetson Bennett enjoyed and who, for now, is really saying all the right things about this. Beck seemingly understands that he's judged by more than just the touchdowns that he throws and the interceptions that he avoids. He's also judged by how much he leads his team to victory. And Beck clearly believes this is a Georgia chance that has an opportunity to collect a lot of victories. Otherwise, he wouldn't have returned. And as Georgia fans get ready to watch Carson go on this final journey here in a Georgia uniform, I think it's going to be incredibly entertaining. And I think the sky's the limit for what Georgia could be able to achieve on the field here this season. My name is Brandon Adams, and this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans, presented today by Meriwether and Tharp. We're happy to have you with us as we conclude a pre-recorded show for us. Keep in mind this, that tomorrow, and many of you are kind of aware of this, it's a Friday. It's the day after the NFL draft. We're coming home from our Dog Nation cruise on board Allure of the Seas. So for our podcast audience for tomorrow, we're not going to have a show. And the reason we're not going to is simply because post-NFL draft, it's just simply too dated. And given the travel issue that we have, we're not going to be able to pre-record one in time for you to be able to hear that the way you normally do. So we're going to take Friday off on podcast only. We're still going to be live on video tomorrow, recapping the first round of the NFL draft and looking ahead to the upcoming rounds there as well. Our colleague, Cody Chafin, is going to work with Connor Riley there on that. They're going to discuss all of the draft chatter coming off the first round and into the weekend. That'll be in this space on video at 10 a.m. So to recap, Dog Nation will be on video tomorrow. It will not be Dog Nation Daily. Timing-wise, we're just not going to be able to do that. We want to be in the moment talking draft. So Connor and Cody will do that with you tomorrow. And then, of course, I'll be back on Monday like always. And then we'll kind of get back to our business of doing the podcast like normal there as well. It just seems really weird to put out a podcast that doesn't reflect the news of the day when we know there will be news of the day. So that's the story there on that. So if you want your Dog Nation fix and you're normally a podcast listener, you can check us out on video. And, of course, we'll be happy to have you doing that. Of course, back here again with you in normal format across all platforms on Monday. And, of course, all of this made possible today by our friends at Meriwether and Tharp, your source for Georgia divorce. I had a great conversation with Bob Tharp and his wife, Ashley. They came by to see us at the UJ bookstore a couple of Saturdays ago for G-Day. And, boy, what a fun conversation that was. And I was so happy to hear that as Meriwether and Tharp kind of expands out and becomes your source for Georgia divorce truly, with offices now outside the Atlanta area. They're in Savannah. They're in Athens. They're in Carrollton. So many great new branches opening up. I'm happy to hear that because, as I've told you before, I really do believe that in one of the most challenging times that you could possibly face, if you find yourself going through the divorce process, being able to get the level of care and service that Meriwether and Tharp has been famous for, I just think this is an incredibly important service that they provide, and I'm so thankful to know that for you, it's out there if you need it. So I want you to check them out online, GeorgiaDivorceTeam.com. That's the website, GeorgiaDivorceTeam.com. Whether you're in Atlanta or Athens, Savannah, I've heard so many great stories about people who kind of found themselves in a tough spot, not knowing how to navigate the divorce process, being scared and confused about that as you imagine someone would be. But having one of those attorneys from Meriwether and Tharp right there at their time of need, ready to help out. That first initial consultation is free, so therefore there's no reason to hesitate on taking advantage of that today. So once again, online, GeorgiaDivorceTeam.com. Meriwether and Tharp is your source for Georgia divorce. All right, so we're going to talk to Kaylee Manziel again here coming up before we're done. I'll tell you more about that here in a little bit. That's a lot of fun. But prior to that, I want to go around the doghouse. And tonight begins the 2024 NFL Draft. And I was mentioning the Dog Nation cruise a moment ago. This is not an ad. This is the genuine truth. I do wish that everybody who's listening or watching right now could experience what we get to experience on that final night of the cruise, because it's become a little bit of a tradition for us, a new recent tradition, to have our big NFL draft party on board our cruise ship with Royal Caribbean on the final night of our Dog Nation cruise. And the celebration and the cheering that goes on when these Georgia names get announced, it's just so much fun. It becomes kind of the talk of the cruise ship because everybody sort of sees it and hears it. And, of course, there's this, you know, red and black all over the cruise all week long. And so that's always a lot of fun. And tonight, as I'm pre-recording this prior to it taking place, we expect this to once again be true there as well. We know that Brock Bowers is going to be a first-round pick. He's experienced some of what all the top picks experience. As you get later in the process, there's the poking and the prodding and the, are we sure about this? There's the kind of skepticism that creeps in. It's one of the things we hate about the pre-draft process, not just for Georgia players like Bowers, but for all of you know, these prospects. They're in this conversation because of how good of a football player they are, and yet when you get down to the end, all anybody wants to talk about what's wrong with them or what's in doubt about them, and we don't like that about the pre-draft process. We think that's a little bit annoying, but even with that, Bowers is, of course, going to withstand all of this. And, of course, not only will he be a first-round pick, but he's likely to be a very high first-round pick, and we would say deservingly so. Amarius Mims is another player who that story is seemingly going to be told about there as well. And what a great thing for Georgia this is going to be, because the same way I said earlier that Carson Beck has the potential to become kind of a proof of concept for Georgia of here's a guy that showed some patience, that realized the grass wasn't greener, and became financially rewarded for his decision. Well, gosh, that's also true for Amarius Mims there, too. This was one of the more high-profile transfer visits that's ever happened in this portal age in college football. Remember the big glitz and glamour of him going to visit Florida State? And ultimately, Mims decided to stay at Georgia. And that decision to stay going to result in him having his name called as a first-round pick, we believe anyway. And how thrilling is that for a guy like that, who obviously we think has an incredibly bright NFL future? But the real question kind of becomes, can Georgia get that third name called? Can it get that third first-round pick? At one point in time, it seems like Kamari Laster was likely to be that third first-rounder, and by now, some of the Laster in the first-round stuff seems like it's kind of dematerialized just a little bit. But lo and behold, how about the story for Ladd McConkey, who all of a sudden, it's him that's kind of ascended. And in a lot of these mock drafts, kind of prior to us recording this show today, I continue to see McConkey having his name mentioned right there in the first round. And I think that's great for Ladd because, I mean, this is one of the great stories of overcoming all the odds you'll ever see. And it seems like Georgia's had more than its fair share of those stories over the course of the last few years. But also it's a stern rebuke to anyone who says, oh, Georgia's not a place you want to go if you're a wide receiver. Well, why would you not? When a guy like McConkey has the recruiting profile that he had to exit with the draft profile that he currently has, why wouldn't you want to be a receiver coming to a place like Georgia? So I think it makes tonight really fun. Obviously, tomorrow live on video, we'll be recapping a lot of this with you. We'll be celebrating tonight with folks on board Allure of the Seas with us. Georgia hoping to get at least three first-rounders. We believe they probably will, and we believe another. In a successful chapter of NFL draft history written for these Georgia Bulldogs. Fun to watch this over the course of the next couple of nights, and that is Around the Doghouse here today on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Meriwether and Tharp. So also fun for us coming up before we're done, a chance to go cruise around the SEC with our good friend Kaylee Manziel. We're kind of combining that with Kaylee's Corner, which we so frequently do when these kind of less than normal shows. Kaylee helps us bring a little extra energy to the proceedings. So she'll do that a little bit later on. She said some really entertaining questions for me as it relates to the SEC here this week. So we'll do that coming up in just a little bit. But we got some more business to take care of before we get to that. So let's keep the conversation going here today on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Meriwether and Tharp.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
You know, sometimes we brand this segment as On the Road with Jeff Sintel. Well, today, Jeff literally on the road, on assignment, as we like to say in the industry here, and kind enough to join us on a shockingly different day, a remarkable breach of protocol here. Normally, Jeff Sintel, Friday guest. Today, he joins us here on Thursday. All of this for a good cause, as we are officially on the final day of our Dog Nation cruise, which is sort of sad for current me to think about future me, knowing I'm sort of experiencing the last day on the cruise. But the good news, though, with Jeff is that I believe day four for us is, A, we know it's our NFL draft party, which is always a lot of fun, but it's also perfect day Coco K day for us there as well. And Jeff, I know you like that as much as I do. So how much fun are you planning on having, and how excited are you about the cruise overall? But certainly perfect day Coco K here on this Thursday.
Hey, Brandon, man, I tell you what, future me and present me, that all sounds really good. I'm going to make sure I know my Royal Caribbean Coco K intel here. I believe I'm going to spend a lot of time that day at Hideaway Beach, I believe. Hideaway Beach, I believe that's the correct term.
Sure is.
And then maybe might stroll by the beach club. But you talk about a busy day, Brandon, and it's a different busy day than traversing the perimeter of Atlanta and up and down 75 when you can say, well, I got a pretty good Thursday. I got to go to Coco K, got to go to the beach club, got to go to Hideaway Beach, and then I got to watch the NFL draft with about 200 dog fans. I mean, that's a pretty good day.
No, I would definitely say that it is. We are certainly excited about all of that. And obviously, still got some business to take care of here. So let's talk some UGA recruiting for a moment. And, you know, we've had a busy time as of late. Ryan Montgomery's committed. Mason Short committed not all that long ago. Darren Akinabon obviously committed coming off of G-Day, and all that's been really fun. And there's always that sense among Georgia fans of, okay, well, what's coming next? So I did want to talk to you a little bit about what is coming next for Georgia recruiting. And I guess I wanted to start with this. You know, in the case of Short, it was, actually, I'm just sort of ready to make this announcement, so therefore I'm going to accelerate my timeline, go ahead and do it. And then Ryan Montgomery sort of did the same thing. And in some respects, even a guy like Matt Zollers, who ultimately did not choose Georgia, it sort of felt like he had a similar process here of, well, why do I, you know, wait for months when I can just go ahead and do this now? Is this just a couple of individual stories that are not part of a larger trend? Or do you think that we're going to see a little bit of a fast forward button pushed on other recruits in this 2025 class? And we may see a little bit more of a hastening of guys making announcements sooner than we thought.
Like that word, Brandon, hastening. I think we're just going to call it the dispense with the pleasantries thread, or this trend right now with a lot of these young men. And a lot of them, Brandon, they tell me, man, they just really, that's really not their jam to go on a bunch of official visits. They want to find one school, go to that school multiple times and have a lot of fun with it. I mean, that's really kind of the way they look at it. And I do feel that, you know, Zollers was abrupt, Short was abrupt, and definitely Ryan Montgomery was abrupt, where it's like, you know, what am I waiting for, Brandon? I think it's probably young people these days a little bit. I think it's also the oversaturation with recruiting at the same time. And it's funny, Brandon, sometimes life gives us market corrections. Remember those days like a couple years ago when we thought, oh my gosh, what's unlimited official visits going to look like? And everybody thought, oh, these kids are going to be taking 8, 9, 10, 11. We're actually seeing a lot of recruits take fewer officials, fewer visits in general. Brandon, you asked me what's on the road ahead. A lot of these kids are just kind of chilling until June. That's when they'll take all their official visits, because that's when these colleges want to take a breath a little bit before they get out on the road, before they host camps and official visitors every weekend and almost seemingly every weekday in June. It's almost a pause button for a little normalcy. Really, I think the most active things you'll see on the Georgia front is you'll see new, let's call him Pied Piper, Ryan Montgomery, working receivers, working running backs, working offensive linemen. And you'll see a lot of that taking place. Ethan Barbour will be in the mix as well there, as Georgia's class will try to build itself from peer-to-peer recruiting just as much as staff recruiting. Now, let's not get crazy here. The Dogs are still going to recruit their turn signals off on the recruiting trail. But what I mean by that is that you're going to see maybe the class, guys like Short, guys like Akinabon, guys like Montgomery. Now that the class has more like seven or eight people, you're going to see more of that class try to build within each other.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I also want to go back to something else you were saying a moment ago, where it almost seems like official visits mattered less than they used to. When Montgomery committed to Georgia, he did so with like an official visit to South Carolina, I guess, scheduled. Now, no need for that. In the case of Georgia taking Montgomery's commitment, it did so knowing he had an official visit on the docket coming up for Juju Lewis, also kind of casting some, you know, doubt around that. I would say that when Matt Zollers chose Missouri over Georgia, he did so without taking a ton of visits to either place. You know, it's almost like it's become like the coaching thing, where anytime you see the message on X or something like that about so-and-so coach was spotted at so-and-so place that has a job opening, you know it's fake, because coaches don't visit places anymore. They do this stuff via Zoom, and they don't show up until they know they're going to that particular job. It almost seems like the actual act of, you know, recruiting players is becoming a sort of similar thing here, of the thing about enjoying the process and taking your five official visits and getting the steak and lobster dinner everywhere you're going to go. I don't know, Jeff, you live in this world. I just sort of follow it. But tell me, it seems like that stuff has less meaning than it used to.
I feel like it does, Brandon. I feel like most of these young men, they have people kind of, I won't say clawing, but pulling at them in a lot of directions. That's their high school coaches, their high school teams. That's their, sometimes it's church groups and youth groups. Sometimes it's the family vacation. Sometimes it's these cool Future 50, Elite 11, Under Armour type things where their summers are busy, man. And the thought of them just going to five places so they can travel to five places doesn't really seem as appetizing to them as they used to, especially, you know, hey, they won't really need to worry. Hey, it's a free trip. Well, in a lot of cases, these free trips are going to come a lot easier now with the wages they can command with NIL dollars as a college football player.
So I'm trying to think about how I want to phrase this question. Every time you and I have talked about the 2025 class, it's always sort of like gone back to me. My narrative, my theme has been in-state big men, offensive and defensive linemen in-state. This is the year to clean up with as much of that as you possibly can. My question for you is, do you see anything looming on the horizon that would kind of nudge that off the perch of being the number one storyline for the class of 2025? For me, this is all about, you know, do you get the big men in state this year or not? Do you get those best offensive and defensive linemen or do you not? Do you see anything looming out there that might change that as the top talking point for this 2025 class?
Yeah, I think that's a good thought, Brandon. I think it's going to come down to really four names, maybe not so much geography. But if Georgia somehow doesn't win the recruitments of a guy like a Cortez Smith and then a guy like a Juan Gaston, and then you've got the same thing with Elijah Griffin, and if Georgia can't win back Justice Terry, that suddenly becomes much different, because without those four names, then Georgia's not going to home grow the trenches in 2025, and they're going to have to scurry a little bit and kind of audible for what they're trying to do. I think the remaining additions to this class, it's really top heavy, Brandon. I mean, yeah, sure, people would say it's okay to lose Juan Gaston, if you end up with a David Sanders, perhaps. There's still some question there about Josh Petty and how his weight situation's coming on. I know he's told me he wants to feel confident and emboldened to be around 285, 290 pounds by the time his senior year rolls around. That's something to monitor. That's a little interesting compared to past years with past linemen, a guy getting his weight up to a certain amount to sort of qualify for that Georgia and SEC standard. I think the receivers are going to be very interesting. Georgia's got two in-state that they'd love to have. I think the bigger narrative there, Brandon, is it's kind of like a discussion and an examination on college football recruiting in general, in the transfer portal, in the NIL era. I believe the staff in Athens, like a lot of staffs across the country, thinks that, for lack of better English here, there's less of a flight risk when you take those in-state prospects because closer to home, closer to mom and dad. I mean, really, Brandon, it seems to me like, especially with Georgia, I've said this before, I know it probably sounds like hubris when describing this program, but I think now Georgia has reached the point where Georgia makes NFL prospects rather than NFL prospects make Georgia successful on the field. And sometimes, Brandon, I'm going to be honest with you, brother, it's something as simple as, hey, why don't we go get the guy that's more likely to not give us hassles in the portal, or not likely to give us hassles maybe after a great freshman year, saying, hey, what about me now? What about now? Hey, am I worth a little bit more now? I think these are all realities right now in modern college football recruiting.
No, I think that's really interesting. And the time we have left, I haven't had a chance to talk to you about this, but I'm always interested in your perspective. You're watching the game from the field. What stood out to you about G-Day, Jeff? This is kind of away from just the topic of recruiting, but obviously a lot of these are players you once covered as recruits. What was interesting to you now a couple of Saturdays ago, Georgia's spring game?
You know, most would expect me to talk about the freshmen here because number four and number one, whose names don't really need to be attached to those jersey numbers, they look really good. They look really advertised. But for me, it was the guys that need to hit for Georgia in 2024 really look like they're hitting. And I'm talking about C.J. Allen. Gosh, Brandon, he looks so good. Yeah. And not just that diving interception. You look at a player like I think Dominic Lovett was a guy that I almost feel like you could look at his season last year and say Georgia didn't really use him as much as they needed to, or as much as they probably should have. And then another guy that really jumped out to me, Brandon, I hope it jumped out to everybody, was Mykel Williams. Yeah. Man, Mykel is a guy. If you put him, I mean, this was a guy that if this was normal football rules applying, he might have had five pressures, he might have had 2.5 sacks. he would have wreaked a lot of havoc for the Dogs. And this is a money year for him. Everybody knows that. And he looks like he's really ready for the challenge with every bit of that. A lot of those veterans, I thought, that needed to, you know, step into that all-SEC, all-American caliber territory, I thought Georgia got that from a lot of spots on G-Day.
Are you also of the mindset that, you know, the kind of general consensus is defense sort of answered back after a lot of whispers and rumors that it had been a better spring for the Georgia offense, and maybe on that particular Saturday, it was a time for the defense to show that it's still very, very formidable, and perhaps leaving some Georgia fans feeling like it could be a little bit of a return to form for kind of like national championship level defenses that Georgia had, certainly in 2021 and also in 2022 as well. Do you kind of think that was a little bit of a reversal of course for what had been the prevailing narrative prior to that?
Yeah, Brandon, I'm going to be honest with you. I know you love a good conspiracy theory on your program as much as the next podcast and show host, but to me, it looked like, and everybody knows spring games are vanilla, but it really looked like Kirby Smart put that offense into situations where the defense was going to have the upper hand. I'm going to be plain and simple with it, Brandon. I was talking to Connor Riley about this yesterday after Montgomery committed, and it was, or the other day after Montgomery committed. And if you take away Michael, Nazir Stackhouse, and Warren Brinson, Georgia's entire defensive front is almost exclusively guys that are either freshmen, yeah, sophomores, or redshirt freshmen. And this is classic struggle, Brandon, of the 22-year-old athlete going against the 17, 18, 19-year-old athlete. We know who should win that based on strength, based on principles of bigger, faster, and stronger. Conversely, you look at the offensive line, Brandon, they didn't run the ball a whole lot, and that's really something that those offensive linemen, it sure looked to me like they were chomping at the bit to get a chance to do, and they know spring games aren't really about that. And then the age factor is always there, Brandon. You got Xavier Truss, class of 2019, Tate Rutledge, class of 2020, Jared Wilson, another guy that's been in Athens 3 or 4 years. You keep going down the line, Dylan Fairchild and Micah Morris, all been in Athens since the spring of 2021 or the summer of 2021. And it's no wonder why all those reports, I was talking to Dalen Everett after the game about that. And I said, so was this a way for the defense to kind of clap back? And he was like, yeah, sort of, but you know, we got players too, and our jobs are to make each other better. And that's what we're out there to do. So I'm going to buy some stock into the conspiracy theory that some calls, some schemes, some situations in that totally scripted G-Day experience were kind of slanted to maybe handicap the offense with Carson Beck and all those veterans on the other side.
Well, that is certainly an interesting thought to consider, Jeff. We appreciate your insight into all things related to G-Day and the stuff related to Georgia recruiting too. And I know how much, Jeff, people look forward to having you on board the Dog Nation cruise. You know, I think you're like me, that it's just a great experience to kind of get to know some folks in our audience a little bit better than the regular course of events here while we're in the state of Georgia allows us to do. It's a fun time with a lot of great people, and it's a great experience. I feel very blessed to be a part of it. And Jeff, I'm happy to share it with you. So looking forward to being on board Allure of the Seas within this Dog Nation cruise that, as people are hearing this, actually kind of in a lot of ways concludes for us here today. But what a fun time, and I'm glad we get a chance to share it together.
Hey, Brandon, that was perfectly stated. Blessed is a great way to look at it, that we can call this a work week surrounded by so many members of our audience. And if you haven't done it, if you want to do it, if you're thinking about it, get off that fence and join us next year or the year after, because we promise you it'll be a lot of fun.
Jeff, great stuff. Thanks so much. We will look forward to talking to you soon here on, well, normally it's a Friday for you, but today it's on Dog Nation Daily presented by Meriwether and Tharp. So glad to have you here with us, Ford, and we'll look forward to catching up with you soon.
Anytime, brother. We're here for him every day of the week.
Yes, sir.
Take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
Well, I tell you what, Jeff Sintel really delivers, even on a day that's kind of atypical from being on the show. Fun stuff there. Speaking of fun stuff, as we talked about, it's also the final day of our Royal Caribbean cruise for Dog Nation, as you're hearing us speak right now, which, you know, kind of makes you a little sad. But as they say, you don't be sad that it's over. Be happy that it happened. And we are certainly happy that it is happening here right now. We want to remind you, you can enjoy the same happiness yourself here as... Did I say that word right? Happiness? I feel like that's what I'm trying to say. Happiness? anyway, as you go cruising around with Royal Caribbean, as we're cruising around the SEC, courtesy of Royal Caribbean right now. In fact, today for us is that perfect day, Coco K Day. We're happy to take all of the folks on our Dog Nation cruise there for that. And as Jeff mentioned, you know, one of the things that we're excited about, not just the stuff that we've talked to you about before, the thrill side and the chill side, but, you know, also the debut of Hideaway Beach. And for a lot of our folks, they'll get a chance to see that. I had a chance to experience Hideaway Beach back in January, and I thought, man, this is just sort of made for our Dog Nation, you know, cruise experience. And, you know, people who want to enjoy that full opportunity there, they got the cabanas, they've got the swim-up bar, you know, and a lot of folks also love the water slides and the Oasis Lagoon pool. And just everything that make, I've taken a lot of people to Perfect Day Coco Cay. I've told a lot of people about Perfect Day Coco Cay. And I've never had anyone have any reaction other than, man, this is an amazing experience. I'd love to come back here as much as I possibly could. And if you're watching a video, you see the images there of Hideaway Beach, this sort of adults-only enclave. It's kind of like a Vegas pool party. You got get the DJ in the pool. You get the swim-up bar. You've got the wonderful sort of infinity edge pool that kind of look out over the ocean. I mean, it's everything you want it to be. And a lot of our folks are getting a chance to experience that today. So if you want your own experience, make sure you check out Jessica Slater. She's a wonderful travel agent, specially selected for us by Royal Caribbean to sort of book all of our Royal Caribbean cruise vacation needs. And so you can reach out to her. You can email her, jslater@dreamvacations.com. That's jslater@dreamvacations.com. And she'll tell you about all the really fun things going on for Royal Caribbean here in 2024. Now, speaking of fun things, for our cruise around the SEC, courtesy of Royal Caribbean this week, we've been doing something really cool, kind of combining a segment we sometimes do in the show with a segment we do every day on the show. Cruise around the SEC, courtesy of Royal Caribbean, combined with Kaylee's Corners. We welcome in Kaylee Manziel. Now, as we do this, don't forget tonight we have an edition of Dog Nation at Large once again. Kaylee Manziel, Connor Riley. I understand they're going to be having the Dog Nation draft taking place. That's going to be a lot of fun, and already a lot of bells and whistles from that from a production standpoint, which is going to be really, really cool. But Kaylee, sure enough, you've done great with the Kaylee's Corner on the SEC through here this week as we're cruising around the SEC with Royal Caribbean. So I appreciate you making this such a fun part of our week here, and I will give you control over the show once again to sort of take the conversation where you want to go, ask me questions, and we'll just sort of see how it plays out.
All right, it's the last day that I'm here, at least for now. So we got to go out with a bang. So please, this is going to be the SEC playoff prediction edition.
Okay.
If you could say that five times fast, I won't make you answer anything because I know that would be tough. So first, we have to lay the foundation, right? How many SEC teams make the 12-team playoff, Brandon?
I think there'll be at least three. I don't know that I have all 12 of my teams figured out yet. Obviously, that comes later in the summer. There will be at least three, possibly four, but I'm going to go three for now.
All right, so who's going to be your dark horse pick for an SEC team that makes it into the 12 team?
It's a team we talked about a little bit yesterday from a standpoint of if it doesn't go well, then, you know, hey, maybe there's trouble brewing. But, you know, this time a year ago, I was really talking up LSU. I thought that Garrett Nussmeier, the backup quarterback, had a chance to overtake Jaden Daniels. And that prediction turned out to be laughably wrong because Daniels became the best player in the sport a year ago. But if I liked Nussmeier a year ago, there's no reason why I shouldn't like him right now. He's even more experienced, having been around the program, and I think he could be set up for a really, you know, successful year. I also think that LSU's got a fairly favorable schedule, and LSU's made some big-time hires on defense. They stole Blake Baker, the defensive coordinator, away from Missouri. They stole Bo Davis, the defensive line coach, away from Texas. They're bringing back Corey Raymond. They were not good defensively last season, but the coaching hires would suggest they want to get better. So from a dark horse standpoint, I think the most interesting team to talk about from a playoff standpoint that no one's really discussing is probably LSU.
I think one argument that has continued to be had throughout Dog Nation is this idea of conference supremacy when it comes to postseason. Do you root for people inside of your conference, or do you have no loyalty to them? So my question to you is, say it gets down to the national championship, would you rather Georgia play another SEC team or a big opponent like, say, an Ohio State or a USC?
Well, I'll say this about conference pride. I used to have a lot of conference pride. I used to kind of believe in that, especially the time in which the SEC geographically sort of meant something when it was Southeast teams. I felt a certain kind of like kinship to the sort of border states that kind of made up the league with my favorite team, Georgia. I really don't feel that way as much anymore. These are teams that have a common financial interest now more so than anything else. And I know that Greg Sankey loves the idea that this league is made up of teams that are of, as he loves to say, contiguous states, states that touch each other. But that doesn't mean a ton to me. So the whole idea of like conference pride is sort of out the window for me. But individual matchups do still matter. So to your question of, well, who would you rather see Georgia play in a playoff game or a national championship? It's the teams that Georgia's starting to build a little bit of history with would make for the most interesting game. The most interesting game of all for this upcoming season would probably be Georgia and Ohio State. So, you know, if you want to root for the biggest possible game, the most interesting possible outcome, eventually getting to Georgia and the Buckeyes, especially given the fact that the Buckeyes are going to be the most talked about team here this offseason, that's probably the most interesting outcome. But somehow, you know, Georgia versus an SEC team like Alabama, there would still be some interest in that too. And I don't think Alabama probably makes it that far, but there would still be some interest in that just because while Georgia and Alabama don't have a long-standing history as rivals, certainly in the Kirby Smart Nick Saban era that kind of came true. And to see those two teams playing again in the postseason after we've seen that so much over the course of these last few years, there would still be some sort of, like, I guess, common feeling to that of, oh, this is sort of a familiar opponent. So there'd maybe be a little bit of energy around that.
All right, last one. I'm going to put you on the spot here. It may be a repeat of what you just said, but any chance that I get to apologize on behalf of myself to the way I absolutely roasted you all last season for saying that Texas was going to make the playoff, and then they did. I will never let myself live that down because there was no one who made more fun of me than you. Obviously, I see that you do have some good prediction skills. So this is your way too early prediction for national championship teams, score, winner.
Oh, wow. Well, I'll take Georgia as the winner. And if it's Ohio State that they're playing, my assumption is that's probably a pretty close game again. I'll take it somewhere in the neighborhood of, let's call it 31-27, Georgia beating Ohio State for the national championship. Buckeyes not good enough to beat Georgia, but as we saw in 2022, good enough to keep it close. And listen, I'm sure we'll do plenty more on this as we kind of move towards the summer. But knee-jerk reaction to this right now, it sort of feels like we're getting towards Georgia and Ohio State. I would say the Buckeyes are certainly, you know, good enough to make that a close football game. They've proven that in the past. Big question for them, though, is at quarterback. You know, I don't know that their spring game a couple of weeks ago did much to make you feel confident. They truly have the kind of signal caller that now Chip Kelly's offensive coordinator, Ryan Day, need there. But this is still a very talented team, and I would say the most likely opponent for Georgia in a national championship game.
Yeah, I don't think I would mind seeing a Georgia-Ohio State rematch, especially because on the last play of the game 2 years ago, I was so nervous I couldn't even watch it. I had my eyes covered. I was like, I'm just going to let everybody around me tell me or let me know what just happened. And when I heard everybody shout, I knew that Georgia had won. But I think I'd actually like to see a win in person.
There are a small handful of games that have brought out an extra level of emotional energy for me. Not all of them wins. Like the 2018 SEC Championship game was a very emotional game for me, and obviously it was a disappointing one. They lost Alabama here, you know, this past December, kind of a similar type of thing because you just want to see that winning streak keep going for as long as it could. But a couple of the wins for me that just sort of stood out more than anything else, one of those is Ohio State. I don't like Ohio State. I don't like Ryan Day. I don't pretend otherwise. I'm not going to.
You don't say.
I'm not going to lie and try to be something I'm not here. So, you know, the idea that the Buckeyes came down here to our state to play that game, I just felt like that was a game that Georgia had to win. And for a good while, it seemed like Georgia might not. And the thrilling comeback, I mean, it's a magical moment because of the way the clock struck midnight right as the field goal missed. We all remember that. But there are a small handful of games in a period of time for Georgia football that have been so many incredible victories. There are a small handful of them that have just sort of felt different. And for me, Kaylee, that game against Ohio State was certainly one of them.
I think the most difficult part about that ending, too, is how the win didn't feel within inside of our control. Like, yeah. Ultimately, it came down to if he was going to make it or not that determined the outcome of the game. So I would like to see a potential rematch where Georgia stays in control of the game the entire time and there is no doubt left on the field.
I like the idea of that. Kaylee, you've done a great job all week long. We'll see you tonight for Dog Nation at Large, and thanks for being here today as a part of Cruise Around the SEC, courtesy of Royal Caribbean. Good stuff there from Kaylee. We got the Caitlin Clark little hard thing there from her at the end. I'll try not to be as creepy as what's his name, Greg Doyle. I'll try not to be as creepy as that dude was the other day with the heart gesture there. But good stuff nonetheless. And speaking of good stuff, I know Kaylee also loves the Finnish long drink, and I love it too. And so why not? Let's all just love it together here. So go to thelongdrink.com. You can find out where you can pick some up. And I tell you, the one thing I always hear folks say is, the thing they're really looking for is that peach-flavored version of the Finnish long drink. That's the limited flavor for a limited time. That is certainly a premium option. It kind of goes well with all the other varieties there, too. The long drink cranberry, I'd say that's probably Kaylee's favorite. She's told me that a few times. I like the traditional in the blue can, the grapefruit flavor, the gin kick. But listen, there's a Finnish long drink out there for you. You want the long drink zero, no carbs, no sugar. That's probably a good choice for me on the other side of this Royal Caribbean cruise vacation. Probably need as much no-carb, no-sugar stuff as I can get into my diet after all of that. But the long drink strong, 8.5% alcohol by volume, just a really fun category of beverage. It's a ready-to-drink cocktail. In other words, it's a mixed drink. You don't have to mix yourself. It started off in Helsinki back when the Summer Games were there in like the 1950s, and it's been in America now going on, what, you know, 5-6 years, been in Georgia now for as long as we've been talking about it, and so many of you have found it and really discovered what we believe, which is of all the ready-to-drink cocktails that you can find, this is really the dominant option in that category from a flavor standpoint. It tastes better than all the other choices. So make sure you pick some up today, and you can find out where you can do so online, thelongdrink.com. So as we wrap up here, let me just say this here real quick. This kind of concludes for us our pre-recorded shows during our Dog Nation cruise. Tomorrow, live at 10 a.m., Connor Riley, Cody Chaffin's breaking down the NFL draft. I'll see you back here for Dog Nation Daily, presented by Meriwether and Tharp, again on Monday. And, you know, the one thing I always like to say in moments like this is how appreciative I am for the opportunity to get a chance to speak to you on a daily basis like this. And to have a show that's more than just a show that kind of hopefully fosters community, and certainly you're able to take hundreds of folks on board a Dog Nation cruise. You get a sense that, yeah, you know what? We're doing more here than just talking college football. We're also making friendships and getting to know each other. And I take that really serious. I'm very, very appreciative of that. And for those of you not lucky enough to be on the cruise with us, the fact that you would still show up and be a part of our show here each and every day, that means something to me there as well. So sincerely, deeply, I say thank you, whether you're on the cruise or not. Of course, I look forward to being back with you again. As I get ready to wrap up, let me remind you, Gator Hater Updater, 1,265 days. That's how long it's been since Florida's beaten Georgia. We love reveling in that because we believe a good Georgia fan is a Gator hater, first and foremost. And our buddy Eddie, you know he thinks that as well. So y'all have a great day. We'll see you back here for us on Monday for Dog Nation Daily. Tomorrow live on video for some draft coverage. And we'll talk to you soon here. Dog Nation Daily, presented by Meriwether and Tharp.